This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by a brilliant leader in the private equity field who spends a lot of his time investing in healthcare. We're with David Friedman. David's a principal at Gage Capital. Gage Capital is this brilliant collection of leaders based in Texas and fascinating group. And he also co-leads the healthcare practice or healthcare investing efforts at Gage Capital. David, can you take a moment to introduce yourself and maybe tell us a little bit about your career and how you ended up finding yourself leading or co-leading healthcare at Gage Capital?
Yeah, sure. Well, first, Scott, thank you so much for having me on today. Appreciate it. Looking forward to the conversation here. So, I've been in private equity now almost 15 years. You know, I started my career in investment banking at KeyBank Capital Markets. And then shifted over to Houlihan Lokey. After a couple years in banking, I actually joined a firm in Chicago, Silver Oak Services Partners. I was the first associate there. They're a middle market private equity firm, and I joined them back in 2007. So spent a couple years there, and again, kind of the traditional private equity background. Went back and got my MBA at Kellogg. I say often it's better to be lucky than good. And I was at Kellogg during the Great Recession. So it wasn't purposeful, but it wasn't a bad way to sit out that time in the economy. So coming out of Kellogg, spent a couple of years actually at Bain Consulting in their Chicago office. And then as Silver Oak raised their second fund, I rejoined them. So I was there for several years, was eventually promoted to principal at Silver Oak. And then in kind of mid-2019, I had this great opportunity presented to join Gage. So I had the opportunity to come down and, Gage had some unexpected departures in their healthcare team, and they were looking to retool the group. And there's just very few opportunities in the private equity world to, really lead your own vertical. And so that was exciting to me. Gage was clearly dedicated to healthcare, had already had some successful investments. But there was also this opportunity to kind of shape the franchise and shape the vertical, our approach to marketing and the sectors we'd prioritize. So those things were exciting. I was excited about the opportunity, but then even more than that, as I mentioned, I co-lead the healthcare team. Gage had also brought on a gentleman named Stan Dennis earlier in 2019, and Stan's an MD, an operating partner, just unbelievable experience across PPMs, post-acute care, revenue cycle, just a host of subsectors. And so while the opportunity to lead a sector was very exciting, and Gage's focus on healthcare is exciting. The opportunity to partner with someone like Stan, who'd most recently been an operating partner at Welsh Carson, I just thought was a very differentiated approach in the middle market. I think resources like that you often find at a Welsh Carson or a Bain Capital, but not often in the middle market. And so the opportunity to partner with the Gage team and lead the healthcare firm led me to warmer weather. Although, as we're recording this, obviously Dallas is in the middle of a deep freeze here, so it didn't quite work out as well as I was hoping it to. But that's kind of the short end of the short story of my career.
Fantastic. And talk a little bit about Gage Capital has collected a bunch of really bright people, a lot of people with engineering pedigrees originally and so forth. Talk about team building and growing a team of really bright private equity professionals. Just a little bit about that and what you've seen.
Yeah. Look, it's a great question. I think one of the things that attracted me to Gage is that we have a really great group. Leadership, culture, that all starts at the top. And I think the founders here at Gage have had a vision on how they wanted to build the organization. And that's kind of bled down through the organization. I think we try to be extremely reflective. And, for example, all the senior team members, including our founders, go through an annual 360 review. You know, we have a part of my language, kind of a strict no jackass rule. And honestly, we just have a lot of people that are passionate about growing businesses. And I think when you add those things together, it just attracts, certain types of people and certain talent. And so we've been really lucky to develop the team we have. It was a huge part of why I came to Gage 18 months ago. I did a bunch of background checks with various folks, and I really think the Gage team does have a great reputation. One thing we're extremely proud of is we were actually named as one of the top 50 private equity funds for founders in 2020 by Inc. magazine. And I think that speaks to some of what you're talking about, the talent of people here, but not just the talent, the type of people we have here.
And it's always struck me as tremendous straight shooters at Gage Capital, which is always a great quality if you're a founder dealing with a private equity fund. Talk for a moment about some of the deals you're looking at, or deals you've done, or sectors you're looking at. Give us a sense of where you're investing and what you're doing in healthcare.
Yep, that makes sense. So the most recent investment we made is in a business, Urology America. So we partnered with a practice down in Austin. From a high level, we think urology is a very intriguing sector overall. A lot of great tailwinds behind it. Aging population, focus on men's health, just a lot of a good high level trends. I think one of the things that makes urology a little different is the opportunity to really grow organically. A lot of these physician practice specialty roll-ups have been very focused on consolidation. And while that opportunity exists within urology for sure, the opportunity to grow the business organically is probably better than most, if not all, specialties. And then there, this is an area where private equity has probably been a little less active. And so felt like we were probably getting in here at the early stages. But what drove us, what got us really excited about this platform was the group of providers we were going to be partnering with. Just a very thoughtful, reflective group. They really yearned to continuously get better. They wanted to build a platform that allowed them to grow and improve while also recognizing healthcare's local and local autonomy is important. So while we're trying to build a national organization, I think, we recognize that, this is something where we have to offer a value proposition that's a little different. And so what we're trying to build with these guys is we recognize, we hear a lot of folks say, well, I don't want to do private equity. And for these guys, they view private equity as, more of a tool to the end game than, the end game itself, and recognize healthcare is constantly shifting and growing. And if you're not improving patient care and identifying ways to reduce costs of the healthcare system, if you're not actively getting better and getting better visibility into your data, and these long-term shifts can be very challenging. So we're really excited about our partnership down there. And I think it's kind of a good example of what we're typically trying to do with partners.
And tell me out on urology for a second, for my own education, not necessarily what Urology Partners is doing. If you went through the history of urology, there were different ancillary services that were important to the profitability of urology practices. If you went way back, and I'm older than you are, it was Lupron, a cancer drug, and then the profitability sort of came out of that. Then it became things like lithotripsy, radiation therapy. There was, blood screening and lab screening. Where is the world at in terms of urology and ancillary services that are important for urology practices today in general, not talking about your specific investment?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think one of the things that's exciting for us is that it's pretty diversified. And you've actually seen with some of the investments from different private equity firms, there are actually some different approaches. Some of these groups are very heavy within radiation oncology. Some of them have very little radiation oncology. Some of them have a strategy where they have an ASC next to, you know, most, if not all, of their clinics. Others have a couple ASCs that are much larger, and yet others don't have any. And so to us, that was the exciting thing about urology. And I think it's frankly exciting to our partners in Austin is they didn't feel like they had everything figured out. They didn't have all of those items figured out, but they had a few of them that they think they do pretty well. And they thought coming together with other groups that maybe have a different strategy or have identified different approaches to improving patient care and growing their business, that continuing to put those groups together, if you're willing to learn and listen from each other, it could be very powerful. So all of those things you're talking about, whether it's the pharmacy, ASCs, lithotripsy, radiation oncology, we're doing some chronic care management within our organization that's been, I think, great for patients as well as for our business. So there really are a number of different services that you can attack here.
And one more question. You talked a little bit about, you know, being at business school during the recession, and it actually is a fascinating issue because timing can be important to private equity investing. You saw private equity funds that invested right before that recession that had difficulty with those funds getting the IRRs they wanted to get. How important is timing to investing? I mean, we're looking at this year being a big year for multiples and valuations, almost surprisingly on the back of 2020, which was sort of challenging at periods of time. But how important is timing in investing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Scott, what a great question. I think I actually mentioned this a little earlier, you know, one of the age old questions, right? Would you rather be lucky than good? And I think, you know, luck's important, right? And timing's really important. It is this interesting time right now. I mean, you know, when I first did my first deal at Silver Oak, you know, in the mid 2000s, 7 times was a pretty big number for a business, and 8 times was, you know, a really big number, right? And I mean, multiples have continued to increase. And there's been this view amongst bankers and sellers and buyers that multiples are going to have to come down at some point. And I think it's interesting. I'm not arguing that multiples will rise forever, but I do think one of the things, you know, if you talk about what are some of the big trends in private equity, I mean, I would tell you it feels like every day the competition is tougher. There's more firms out there. There's more spinouts. You know, you hear about firms lowering their return hurdles. So there's more money out there chasing, frankly, the same or less deals. The debt markets are pretty flush with capital. And I'm not convinced in this theory that eventually prices have to come down dramatically. I don't know that they'll go up forever, but I'm not convinced they have to come down dramatically either. So I do think timing's important because I think a lot of folks have done very well the last several years. If you bought in, you know, 2015 and sold in 2020, maybe it's a little bit of a bad example because of COVID, but even given COVID, I think for the most part, you saw multiples hold or expand. And so a lot of folks have done well timing that way. I think our investors pay us to invest through all cycles of the market. So I think it's a tough thing to say, well, you know, COVID's happened, or I don't know what's going to happen with the economy, or hey, reimbursement outlook's a little tricky right now. So, you know, I think timing's important, but I think that's part of what we're paid to do is find opportunities regardless of what's happening in the macro environment.
It's a fascinating perspective because you have to be good on picking the right companies, and then it helps to be lucky in terms of timing as well. I mean, and again, if you're willing to hold long enough, you can get through a lot of that luck on the timing. But it does periodically create a real issue. If somebody had to exit last year, that could have been a tough year to exit at periods of time of that exit. You know, and just
absolutely.
And so forth. What a fascinating discussion. David, you've had a remarkable career. I remember you at Silver Oak, and what a great fund that is as well. You're at two great places and just fantastic career. David Friedman, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on your success and your success at Gage Capital. Fantastic.
Thank you, Scott. It's been a pleasure. Really appreciate the time today.